We're back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. We're in that transitional period of time when schools are starting, the weather will soon start to get cooler, baseball will be supplanted by football, and summer blockbuster movies will be replaced in theaters by some of the films that will compete for Oscars come award season.
In fact, some of those films are already opening, which is why Dave Lurson joins us now. In addition to being arts and entertainment editor at the Shepherd Express, he's also our regular film contributor. Dave Lurson, welcome to Lake Effect. It is a pleasure to have you back on the show, and for us, it's a kind of a beginning.
Well, yes, you and I haven't spoken to each other at length for many years, I don't think, Bonnie.
I don't think so, and this is going to be fun to get to know each other through movies.
Yes.
Over the next however many years this continues on. And this is a perfect time to talk about movies. It is the beginning of September, and we're going into the big fall release stuff. Before we get to specific movies, though, I want to ask you about some trends. What are some of the things that you're seeing coming out of Hollywood right now?
Well, the fall season, to begin with, is the most important season of the year, not necessarily for revenue at the box office. Summertime is the big revenue time normally, but fall is the time when the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, the nominating committees get together, and they begin looking at the releases in fall. If you look back at Oscar nominations over the past 70-some years or more, especially in recent times, you'll find that very few nominated movies were released before Labor Day. The committee members have a short attention span, short memories. Stuff that's released in fall tends to get nominated, and the Academy has always had a tendency to like certain kinds of movies. Very few comedies have ever won Oscars. They like certain kinds of serious movies dealing with current social themes of one kind or other, and period pieces.
So the costume drama type thing.
Dramas, and then I have to add that the 1970s are already costume drama. I mean, because
which is scary.
Yes, it is. But time has gone on, and polyester leisure suits and bell bottoms and all of this counts as costume dramas now, just as much as Edwardian finery or Victorian era dresses.
This is the push for Oscar nominations. So studios and directors will be out trying to get their movies in front of the Academy, right?
Right. And there are some rules here. To be nominated for an Oscar, the movie has to be released in theaters somewhere in the U.S. on or before December 31st. So you have the phenomenon of a movie that may be an Oscar contender released in New York and L.A. on New Year's Eve. Happens more than you would think. But prior to that, the schedule is very full. And aside from the costume dramas and the period pieces, what I'm noticing this fall is the overall theme of female empowerment, girl power, and even lesbian themes. There's been a movement toward more of this in recent years. The Hunger Games, of course, is a really good example of the girl power movie, and the finale of the Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2. They just can't have Mockingjay. It's a cow that has to be milked more. You know, you need to get more money out of this theme, so they had to divide that in two, kind of like The Hobbit. So that's coming out in fall. But there are also some other kinds of movies that are interesting. Suffragette, a film starring Meryl Streep, who's always good in anything she does, of course. It's a period piece also. Some of these movies fall into both categories. It's set in London, 1912, during the probably earlier stages or maybe middle stages, really, of the movement for women to achieve the vote in that country.
So this is both a costume drama, but is it based on the true story of that in England?
I don't think it's based on a specific true story, but it certainly seems to be very well researched. The objective of the director, who's also a woman, Sarah Gavron, who did a movie called Brick Lane a few years ago, was at the Oriental or Downer Theater. She's very interested in female-themed movies of this kind. She is determined to make a movie that looks like everyday life in London at that time, so it's not going to be quite as beautiful as the typical costume drama we think of, at least as I'm imagining it from the description, but kind of a grittier look, demonstrations on the streets, all kinds of terrible things happen, which I imagine will be alluded to in the movie, women being arrested for protesting and then hunger strikes and being force-fed. So I think we'll see a bit of that in this film.
And that's all true.
Yes.
That all happens.
Yes.
So, all right. So we have things like costume dramas and girl power. What else? I think I sort of alluded to it. Based on true story, is that something else you're seeing?
Yes, based on true stories. And some of these are also costume dramas or period pieces. But based on true stories, there's a whole long list of them. Going through a few of the interesting ones, there's Black Mass, starring Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger, the Boston criminal kingpin. There's also Everest, based on a 1996 climbing disaster in Mount Everest that took 8 lives.
Is that based on the Krakauer book?
Yes.
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 Okay.
Right. The Walk is based on the 1974 tightrope walk by a French acrobat across the two Twin Towers. There already was a documentary called Man on Wire a few years ago that won an Oscar, but it's being remade now as a drama. There is Steven Spielberg's movie Bridge of Spies, based on a Cold War incident exchanging a Soviet and an American spy. Film buffs will be really interested, I think, in Trumbull, with Bryan Cranston playing Dalton Trumbo, the blacklisted Hollywood screenwriter. Helen Mirren, again, always excellent, is in that movie as well. And then finally, there's Steve Jobs, self-explanatory. Danny Boyle, who directed Slumdog Millionaire very successfully a few years ago, is directing this one with Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs, looking at, I think, more the 1980s era, as Steve was experimenting with different kinds of products. Apple hadn't quite conquered the world yet at that point.
No, in fact, they came up and then they went down for a long time.
It looked like they were going to fail before the nerdier forms of computer companies out there, but they obviously came back.
You mentioned something before we turned on the microphones that sounded interesting to me, simply because it involves Robert Redford. And anything that involves Redford at this point, I think most of us find interesting.
Right. Well, A Walk in the Woods. It's based on the memoir by travel writer Bill Bryson. And I never read the book. Some people who have and have seen the movie complain that the casting isn't quite right for it. But I can't comment on that except to say that people who love books are usually disappointed by the movies based on them. So the story here is kind of a late life crisis, I guess. The travel writer, played by Robert Redford, is experiencing a kind of malaise. His friends are dying. He's semi-retired. He needs a challenge in life, and he decides to hike the Appalachian Trail, 2,100 miles long, as I...
All of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he wants to do that desperately. It's a fool's errand. His wife, his son, everybody tells him he's too old, he can't do it. None of his friends want to go along with him because he at least has enough common sense to realize he shouldn't do it by himself, I guess.
It's a long way, yeah.
So he ends up traveling with this old buddy of his he hasn't seen in 30 years or so, played by Nick Nolte. And Nick Nolte is really the best part of the movie. It's a well-developed, cranky, eccentric character. The Nick Nolte character is obviously too obese and too, I guess you could say, handicapped. He has a trick knee, and he's attempting to do the Appalachian Trail alongside his somewhat better-in-shape friend. So they actually do embark on this, and without giving away too much, although if you've read the book, I think the movie adheres to the plot line. But basically, it's an odyssey type of thing, one of the oldest sorts of stories we have. They meet weird, interesting, strange people along the way. They have incidents they have to overcome, challenges along the way. And really, the movie, I think, is more about the need to keep trying things, whether you succeed entirely or not. If you give up on life, you've given up on life. We should continue to try to do things.
Does it transcend the buddy film genre? I mean, is it obviously these two guys have a friendship, and that's what propels the film, but is it beyond what we think of?
It wants to be. I don't think it quite gets there, though. It really is a road picture, mostly in dealing with pedestrians rather than the usual car trip kind of thing that we see from Hollywood. So that's a little bit different. I mean, both of these guys are really fish out of water trying to hike the Appalachian Trail. Neither one of them, particularly Nick Nolte, should be doing this, I guess. They've been apart for many years. They have stories. They've grown apart. The Robert Redford character has become very successful, and the Nick Nolte character has been something of a failure in life. So you have that kind of, you know,
tension.
Odd couple dynamic going on. And what's wrong with the movie is that it tries to go beyond that, and it does so by allowing Robert Redford to make little two-minute speeches about the stars and the world and the passage of time. And it looks forced to me.
I was also wondering, too, if we might be looking at it thinking, oh, this is Robert Redford trying to recapture the magic that he had with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, you know, with Paul Newman, where they had this amazing chemistry and it sort of made the film.
Right. It's not as amazing as as that, but it's a good chemistry. I mean, it's... I guess if you suspend the disbelief of particularly Nick Nolte trying to do the Appalachian Trail, there's chemistry there. It's a good buddy picture in that way. The best moments of the movie are intentionally funny. It's moderately enjoyable. It's not a great film, but if you like either of the two main actors, which I do, you'll enjoy it.
All right. Well, we shouldn't end our first conversation together without talking about other things that happen in the fall, and that here in Milwaukee are film festivals. There are quite a few coming up.
Well, at least four that come to mind right away. Of course, Milwaukee Film Festival, the big one, covering a couple of weeks with selections from all over the world. There's also the Milwaukee Short Film Festival in September. This year, the festival is two nights at Comedy Sports and consists mostly of Milwaukee filmmakers. Night number one is a deliberate effort to do a multicultural local filmmaker program with representing minority filmmakers who don't often have a chance to show their work. Coming up in October, I think on the same weekend, actually, there's the Milwaukee Jewish Film Festival with the usual interesting array of Jewish-themed movies from around the world, South America, Europe, and elsewhere. And also the Milwaukee LGBT Film Festival, likewise displaying a vast array of gay and lesbian-themed movies of the sort that we would very seldom see on big screens in Milwaukee.
So lots to look forward to if you're a film buff.
This is the time of year to plan ahead on your film going.
Terrific. Well, Dave Lurson, thanks for coming in, and I look forward to our conversations in the coming months.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor at the Shepherd Express newspaper. He's the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog, and he's also our regular film contributor.